M33, number 3B.
Complete substance, has no lack, no loss, and so on. Can you see how you should or could take any of these ideas, say any idea come to you in your practice, in your silent hour, which gives you a sense, I think this is the crucial point, and it comes to you. Then go and see it blending with all the other synonymous terms, with all the ideas of all the other synonymous terms. And these are exercises you could make not only when something is urgently pressing you to do so, but just as the boy does it in school, he does his numeration tables. We used to take years and years, and always in our practice and everything what we did, we just took every idea and always began to see them in the reflection of all the other ideas. And in this way we get a quite natural sense of a true idea. Is that clear? Shall we do another one or shall we leave it? Another one?
Yeah.
All right, let's take their abundance under life. You like abundance. Now, everybody likes abundance. Abundance of what? Of mind. What does it mean?
Ideas.
Can you see why we are so engaged in getting ideas, in seeing the idea of science? Because that's the abundance. The abundance lies in ideas, not in money, not in physical health, in relationship, in good relationships and so on. It's idea. Abundance of idea. That's what we need. Yes. A spirit.
Purity.
We are abundance. We must have something which corresponds to abundance.
I think.
Life.
But beg your pardon?
Life.
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 And the spirit?
Spirit.
Yes.
What about purity?
Yes. The abundance is pure. I didn't quite get what you wanted to say.
Life.
Life. Yes. But we... Yes, abundance is life. You see, we have life abundance.
Life.
Now, in considering on the mind, we could see that life abundance is ideas. That if we have ideas, we have abundant life. Huh?
Right.
Now, on the spirit, perhaps we see that abundance is pure.
Infinite.
Is infinite.
Unfolding.
Let's see. Huh? So, infinite unfolding of the abundance of life. Huh? Infinite unfoldment of abundance of life. A soul, how can we see that abundance of life, a soul?
Satisfies.
Satisfies, for instance. Huh? It's satisfying. So the abundance of life as idea is satisfying. Much more satisfying than the abundance of a bank account. The stock exchange goes down by 30% and you are unhappy. But the ideas never go down by 30%. We are as principle. The abundance of life as principle.
Relationship.
It's relationship, abundance of relationship.
Structure.
It's structural, yes. The abundance of life.
Time.
We are as principle, yes.
Proof.
Yes.
Huh? Money.
Proof.
The abundance of life is really the proof we have. When we have ideas, that's the proof of the abundance of life. Soul, as life itself, the abundance of life is exalting, huh?
Spontaneous.
Spontaneous.
Overflowing.
Wonderful, huh? The abundance of life is spontaneous, huh?
Overflowing.
Activity. Activity. Is that an idea of life? Yes. Usually we take it as mind, but I can see what you mean. It's the vitality of life, huh? The abundance of vitality of life. Yes.
It has to be action.
That's mind, you see. The abundance of life. Yeah. As truth?
Reality.
Dominion. Huh? It's dominion.
Understanding.
Yes, usually we take understanding as spirit, but what you mean perhaps is consciousness.
Consciousness.
Yeah. That we have an abundance of consciousness. That abundance must be, or you can say that abundance must be a state of consciousness.
Of Christ consciousness.
Of Christ consciousness, you see. Law is mind, you see. Yeah. And then love.
Fulfilled,
the abundance of life is fulfilled, consummated, perfect, perfection, has a plan, yes, is grace, and so on. Can you see two things that you that we must know our synonymous terms? That is the crux of everything. And as I have, shall we leave that exercise here? Do you know now how to do it?
No.
Yes, and why to do it? All right, that's fine. This brings you really to the point of the synonymous terms. And you have seen the moment you I asked about these commutations, seeing an idea in the reflection of all the seven in order to be complete. Before it is not seen in the reflection of the seven, an idea is not complete, therefore it is not an idea. So often people ask, well, how can I know if something that comes to my thought is an idea? How can I know that it is an idea, not just a thought? The only objective standard or measurement you can have is that it is an idea then when we have considered it under the standard of the seven synonymous term. If it fits into the standard of the seven synonymous term, then we can say to that thought which has come to us, that's an idea. Can you see how important it is to make these exercises, or at least to know how to check for oneself when a thought that comes to us is an illusion, or a human thought, or a concept, or an idea. When it is corresponding to all the seven synonymous terms in its nature, then it is an idea. If it doesn't, then it isn't an idea. And in this way we have quite an objective standard on which we can measure if something is an idea. Up to now, in the whole history of mankind, nobody could ever say when an idea is an idea. Never. Yes?
Could you give an example of that, taking that standard, that measurement?
Yes, under the standard or measurement, I understand the seven synonymous terms with its ideas. This is for me the standard or the measuring rod.
Yes.
The measuring rod is really the seven synonymous terms with its ideas. With that measuring rod, I can measure every thought that comes to me and can value, does it coincide with this measuring rod or not? Does it coincide in every aspect with that measuring rod or not? If it does coincide, it is an idea.
That's what I meant, though. Could you take an example as you would do so?
Yes, well, that's what we have been doing here with this exercise. If something comes to me and says, it is abundance, I have demonstrated abundance. I say, oh yes, you have demonstrated abundance. He says, oh yes, I have made a lot of money. So I say, well, then this isn't an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Because you say your measurement is money. Well, money doesn't appear in the whole range of ideas. Or somebody says, well, I have demonstrated abundance because I have got quite a new job and I earn 10 times more than before. This isn't an idea. Earning 10 times more or having a better job. What is a better job? One which runs you down physically within 2-3 years, what is a better job? See, all these better job and money and so on, they don't appear on our standard of ideas. I would say it is, we demonstrate abundance if I have abundant ideas, mind, ideas. I have abundance if I see that it is of the nature of spirit, namely that this abundance is only spiritual, that I have only a spiritual concept of abundance, not a material, not a human, not a social or financial concept of abundance. I would say this abundance is really an idea if it is gives me joy, if it gives me satisfaction, because it reflects soul. Then it is abundance. But if it's only abundance which says, that's a burden, I have so many houses, so many gardens, so many ships and cars to look after that I don't know anymore what to do, then that abundance isn't abundance, it's a burden. It's not the exaltation of life. Well, you can, any argument you can take from the human and just measure it up on our standard of ideas. Well, that brings me to the synonymous term, really, because this principle, what Emma was asking, really presupposes what we are going to consider about the synonymous terms. Now, to teach the synonymous term is a matter of a few years, and I will do it in 20 minutes. At least I will tell you what to do. Yes. Now, synonymous. Again, I repeat what synonymous means. No page. Yes. Well, historically, when Mr. Dawley started teaching the synonymous term, that is, when he started studying the synonymous terms, and the reaction was that this study is nonsense, because synonymous means that the terms are interchangeable, because Mr. Dawley taught that each synonymous term is characterized by specific ideas which are not shared by the other synonymous terms. That only through this differentiation of characteristics can we really differentiate between one synonymous term and the other. In other words, he could see that synonymous terms, as used by Mrs. Eddy in the definition of God as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, are terms which are not freely interchangeable. If synonymous terms would be freely interchangeable, you could ask yourself why then to have seven synonymous terms if you can do it with one. Why make it difficult if you can have it in a simple way? Why didn't just Mrs. Eddy say God is God? Why did she split up the term God into seven synonymous terms? Now, the dictionary is a great help to us. Everything that is intelligent is a great help to us. And the dictionary says very clearly this, and I like you to know this, make a mental note. By the way, it is in the compendium also, and compendium number 4, but just to refresh it and to know. The dictionary says, by synonymous words, we usually understand words that coincide or nearly coincide in some part of their meaning. Can you see? In some part of their meaning. And may hence, within certain limits, be used interchangeably. Can you see? The dictionary says that only within certain limits can synonymous term be interchangeably used. Outside of these limits, they are different. Because the definition goes on and says, while outside of these limits, they may differ very greatly in meaning and use. It is the office of a work on synonyms to point out these correspondences and differences. There must be correspondences and differences. That language may have the flexibility that comes from freedom of selection within the common limits, and so on. To consider synonymous words identical is fatal to accuracy. Can you see? To consider them identical or freely interchangeable is, as she says, fatal to accuracy. To forget that they are similar, to some extent equivalent, and sometimes interchangeable, not always interchangeable, is destructive to freedom and variety. So, you see, in the dictionary, we find this very clear presentation that synonymous terms are not identical terms. High and great are synonymous, but they are not identical. I may be a high man, but not a great man. There may be a high mountain, but not a great mountain. They are synonymous, high and great, but they mean something different. And in certain ways you can say great or high, but in certain ways you either have to choose one of the both in order to make an exact and accurate statement. So we can ask ourselves, therefore, what is that limit within which they are interchangeable and in which fields are they no more interchangeable? Now Mrs. Eddy gives the answer herself, because after the first question in recapitulation where she asks, what is God? And she answers, God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love. The second question is, are these terms synonymous? And her answer is, they are. They are synonymous. They refer to one absolute God. See, this is the limit within which they are interchangeable. They refer to the one absolute God. Each of these synonymous terms mean God. Therefore, they are interchangeable when they mean God. They are also intended to express the nature, essence, and wholeness of deity. And then she says, the attributes of God are justice, mercy, wisdom, goodness, and so on. You see, what she says is about this. Now, she gives the definition of, I just write it always abbreviated, you know, of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. And what she says is that they all refer to God, insofar they are interchangeable. But she says that they also express the nature, essence, and wholeness. She breaks the synonymous term up in three categories, so to say. And the nature of them is mind, spirit, soul. That's the nature. And we will come back to this as a very important point next week. And the essence, she says, the essence of deity is life, truth, and birth. That's the essence, life, truth, and love. And all together is the wholeness. That's their answer. She says, they also are intended to express the nature, mind, spirit, soul, the essence, life, truth, and love, and the wholeness of deity, principle. Because in the prose work, she says, in the Christian Science textbook, it is clearly stated that God is divine principle, and that his synonyms are love, truth, life, spirit, mind, soul, which combine as one. See, her highest sense of the synonymous term was principle, which combine mind, spirit, soul, and life, truth, and love as one. It's the wholeness. So, actually, we could, and this we'll see next week in various ways, you see, that really the deepest meaning of her discovery is that God is principle. And that this principle has a nature of mind, spirit, soul. That's her nature of the principle. Whereas its essence, that which it expresses, that which it demonstrates, is life, truth, and love. So that this is the whole. Now, can I wipe it up so far? Can you still see this way? I needed a bit more room. What has Mrs. Eddy done with that statement? She has taken the indefinite term God. The term God. This is a G and an O and a D. And it means just as much as that. Because the God of everyone is different. So it doesn't mean a thing. G-O-D. And that Mrs. Eddy has seen. She has seen, I must analyze this term in order to make it definite. So that there is accuracy in it and no misunderstanding. What she said is that she uses the prism of science to explain truth. She has that prism, and a prism, you know what a prism means, you have had that in school, it's a crystal or a glass crystal, a threefold, and if we let the light through the prism, it splits up the light into the colors. Meaning that in the light, there are a lot of colors, but as long as they are together, they are just light. Just light without color. This is like God, that light. In that term is so much, but it doesn't mean anything until it is like a light thrown through the prism. Let's go further down. That's me good to go, it's a 90, you know. Instead of talking. So, this is thrown through the prism. And the prism splits it up. To a 3, 4, 5, 6, let's have a 7. See? That's how it is split up. Just as the light is split up in the colors here, in, what is it, violet, blue, green, orange, yellow, orange, blue. Red, and so on. So it is split up in mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. See, so it says, God is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Then came Mr. Dorley and said, yes, but what does it mean? Mind just means M-I-N-D. if I don't know what mind is. If I say mind, then I have my concept of mind. If I say spirit, I have my concept of spirit. If I say God is soul, I have my concept of God as soul. What's the use of it? It's not worth two cents. And therefore he put the great question, it's always the big thing to put the right question. He said, how can I know what is the distinction between mind and spirit, and between spirit and soul? Because the definition of synonymous has said that there are quite distinct characteristics which distinguish each synonymous term from the other. And then came the great point. How on earth can we know that? Because explicitly, textually, Mrs. Eddy doesn't explain it. She doesn't say explicitly what mind is as a whole, what spirit is as a whole, what soul is as a whole. Why she hasn't done that is quite clear afterwards, because she couldn't. The term is too big, too round, and must be seen in a whole structure. But at this point, Mr. Dolick saw, well, in this case, what we can do is to study all the synonymous terms in the textbook. Say, to study all what Mrs. Eddy says about mind, and to ask what characteristic, what quality, what characteristic does Mrs. Eddy attribute to the term mind? And what does she do to spirit and to soul, principle, life, truth and love? And we would naturally see that she would attribute to mind quite a lot of characteristics, not just one or two, quite a lot. Again, a parallel. If we had here light, the white light, which is white, actually it's just light, and it is split up in the colors, we know that we have not just one violet here. Do you say violet?
Yes.
Violet here. Or one blue here. We have, from mind to spirit, from violet to blue, a whole lot of shades of violet. Until at one point it goes just right over to blue. There is somewhere, perhaps not even properly definable, a passage where we say, now that's now blue and no more violet. And so there are perhaps 100 violets and 100 blues and 100 greens and 100 yellow and orange and red and so on. A whole scale of shades of violet. And in the same way, we were asking ourselves, what are those shades of mind? What are those shades of spirit, of soul, of principle and life, truth and love? So what we did at that time is that we took the synonymous term mind, studied every reference in the textbook on mind. We're asking ourselves now, what is it that Mrs. Eddy expresses? What qualities, what ideas, what characteristics are now those which are expressed through the term mind? And we would make a list of them. And then we would take spirit and take all the references in the textbook on spirit and go through them and see what are the characteristics of spirit. And in this way, naturally, we get a whole shading of mind and of spirit and of soul. What we call them now is we get the whole list of ideas characterizing mind. You see, like law, cause, origin, beginning, light, power, action, force, all in all, guiding, leading, intelligence, wisdom, and so on. See, these are the shadings of mind. And so we had a list on each synonymous term. And we got here that standard which you were asking, a measuring rod of ideas.